Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Anti-Federalist Papers and the Constitutional Convention Debates. Edited by Ralph Ketchum. Narrated by Sean Renette. Introduction. The Revolutionary Background of American Constitutional Thought. For anyone interested in political thought and action, the United States during the 1770s and 1780s is perhaps the most exciting period in the country's history. The discussion of political ideas that accompanied the American Revolution was seminal to the effort in 1787 to 1788 to draft and ratify a new constitution for the United States. In the years before 1776, as tension increased between Great Britain and her North American dominions, the rapidly maturing colonies were a laboratory of proposals and revised forms of union and confederated government. Each colony was more or less self-governing under its own constitution. But officials on both sides of the Atlantic probed for a more satisfactory relationship between the colonies and the mother country. The 11 years between the Stamp Act crisis and the Declaration of Independence were years of vigorous, creative political thinking, which produced hundreds of pamphlets, newspaper articles, and other writings on questions of representative government and confederation. Writers in Great Britain, too, debated basic political principles and regarded the many proposals for governing the empire as part of the quest for freer, eventually more democratic, government. Political independence, moreover, required new modes of thinking, not only about the government, but also about national identity. Initially, Britons in America often felt a sharp sense of loss in their repudiation of loyalty to the mother country. Gone or discredited were important parts of the body politic and their undergirding ideas. Revolutionists challenged the House of Lords, military institutions and traditions, and even the monarch himself, symbol and embodiment of the nation. Colonials, who still thought of England as home, regretted, too, the distancing from a cherished land and culture. Salisbury Plain and London, Shakespeare and Milton, the alehouse and the parish church remained deep in the consciousness or subconsciousness of many transatlantic Britons. Americans were uneasy about giving up this national identity and hence moved slowly and reluctantly toward independence. Many remained loyalists because they could not countenance such traumatic loss. Yet by 1776, the radical change in the principles, opinions, sentiments, and affections that was the real American Revolution, as John Adams put it, had taken place. Americans no longer thought of themselves as members of the British body politic. They were no longer part of what they and most enlightened European opinion often regarded as the freest, best-governed nation in the world. New institutions and new ideas of government were needed, then, to replace the rejected British models. Yet as the revolutionary tracts showed, and as the debate over the new constitution would demonstrate anew, Americans had very little beyond British ideology and experience with which to fashion a new nationhood. All the best-known writers, Harrington, Locke, Hutchison, Algernon Sidney, Swift, Trenchard, and Gordon, Price, Berg, and even the works of Voltaire and Montesquieu, idealizing British government, focused American attention on English history and thought. Within this thoroughly British pattern, however, American political thinkers had begun to express vital differences in emphasis. Traditional Tory ideas had much less weight in America than they had in Britain. Ancient institutions such as the church, the nobility, and the common law weakened in the New World. The palaces and fortresses of authority could not cross the Atlantic Ocean. On the other hand, radical Whig thought, emphasizing openness and freedom, loomed proportionately larger in America. A century and one half of physical separation and relatively isolated development had matured what in many ways were distinctive societies. As political leaders sought, after 1776, to move from colony to country, they used British concepts and precedents, but they also fashioned anew for a new nation in a new world. To an initial revolution in loyalty which repudiated a nationality, Americans had to add a second revolution in purpose that would form ideas and institutions for a new polity. Between 1776 and 1787, then, Americans undertook to create a new republic. They had to articulate and establish, perhaps beginning with revised understandings of human nature itself, basic principles and institutions of free government. Following the lead of Tom Paine in Common Sense, many dreamed that the overthrow of oppressive, irrational customs and authority might be followed by a paradisiacal age when only the mildest and simplest bonds of self-government would be necessary. A Western Massachusetts town resolved in 1776 that, "What is the fundamental constitution of this province? What are the undeniable rights of the people, the powers of the rulers, how often to be elected by the people, etc., were matters to be determined explicitly and anew by the people." Though John Adams believed Paine's ideas a star of disaster and warned that it was safest to proceed in all established modes to which the people have been familiarized by habit, he still saw in independence rays of ravishing light and glory. Americans would create, as they announced on their great seal Novus Ordo Seclorum, a new order of the ages. The new government to be fashioned in the United States might become a model for the world. Beginning with New Hampshire in January 1776, every state drafted at least one constitution before 1787. Connecticut and Rhode Island, without royal governors before 1776, merely had to remove references to Great Britain from colonial charters. Thus, the new states added to the theoretical debates of the Revolutionary era a considerable practical experience in drafting and inaugurating new constitutional governments. They tried many, often novel, proposals for legislative, executive, and judicial departments. By 1787, in a famous calculation by Thomas Jefferson, the new states had 11 times 13, or nearly 150 years of experience in republican government. On the whole, Jefferson thought the experiments remarkably successful, proving that the people were capable of governing themselves. Mindful of the oppressions of their last British governors, most states established legislative supremacy based on the principle of consent in their new constitutions. Pennsylvania gave broad powers to an annually elected single house, unicameral legislature. In Virginia and other states, the legislature elected the governor and often had the power to appoint judges and other officials. In some states, though, notably New York and Massachusetts, the executive had more power and was elected directly by the qualified voters. Maryland chose the upper house by means of an electoral college similar to that eventually put into the federal constitution. Bills of rights were drafted and debated in every state. Writing and ratifying the Articles of Confederation led to further discussion of principles and forms of government. By 1787, not only had the theory of self-government been widely debated, but virtually every conceivable device for implementing it had been suggested, if not tried. As had been true during the long debate over representation within the British Empire before 1776, much attention focused on giving voice to the undistorted and uncorrupted will of the people. Small districts, annual elections, rotation in office, versions of referendum and recall and unicameral legislatures were among the devices tried to tie representatives to that will. Intense rivalries, clash of interests, and manipulation of voters and representatives, though, seemed often to lead legislative governments into biased and unwise measures. Many states with two-house, bicameral legislatures, and some with frankly aristocratic upper houses, even found that prolonged deliberation and checks on popular will could result in more dispassionate and practical legislation. By 1787, Americans had tried many devices of representative government and had discussed at length the more sophisticated dilemmas it posed. The liabilities of executive weakness had by 1787 also become apparent. Jefferson and Madison considered the impotent governorship of Virginia the worst part of a bad constitution. the governor, elected by the legislature and required to act only with the consent of a council also elected by the legislature, was simply unable to govern.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?